Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the radio program, Today's Issues, on the American Family Radio Network. American Family Radio, 184 or something like that, stations across the country. And we appreciate you listening. And I know many of you listen on the internet and or you listen on the apps that we have available. Ed Vitagliano in studio with me today. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And Abraham Hamilton III, also known as Abe, who's public policy analyst and general counsel for American Family Association. Good morning, Abe.
Good morning, Tim.
And with us, Fred Jackson, who's here most mornings for the and what's in the headlines report. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning. Good to be with you again.
What do you got there, Fred?
Well, the big news of the day, I guess, that most people are interested in is that Time magazine has named Donald Trump their Person of the Year. And, you know, for the most part—
Not Man of the Year.
Not Man of the Year. No, it's Person now.
They changed that, right?
Yes. Yeah. They had to.
Because sometimes the man of the best man of the year is a woman.
Yeah.
The best— But they say they always sometimes the best man for a job is a woman. So sometimes the man of the year is a woman, so they switch it to person.
The person of the year.
Yes. And that's why we have Ed here.
Right.
Yeah. So you think that's
master of the obvious.
Well, I don't know if that's really PC or not.
No, I agree.
You got Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah, I mean,
or somebody like that.
A woman shouldn't have to, you know, win man of the year.
It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Unless you're Caitlin
and you
Bruce
know what? We try to keep these things separate. Yeah, that's what we, at least here at AFA, we do.
Why? What are they going to do with Jenner?
I know.
Oh, man. I just need to keep my mouth shut.
There's an old song, Mr. In Between. Remember that song?
Oh, wow.
No, I don't.
Listen here. This is a
perfect— Would you Fred, sing? I'm a few bars. I might.
Fred, we expect a level of decorum.
From Fred, at least.
Yes, I'm saying, professionally.
From Fred, at least.
From our news director. So can we just pretend the last 2 minutes didn't happen?
Okay.
And you get back to your Person of the Year report?
Yeah.
Okay, Fred, tell us what's going on in the news.
The sound of analog tape going backwards.
Rewind.
So you got a Person of the Year. Who got the Person of the Year?
Donald Trump. And, you know, it's interesting. Time magazine has done this in the past. They don't always like necessarily the person they name as Person of the Year. Mm-hmm. They have a very long cover article, obviously, on this. When I typed it out or ran it off this morning, the printer was 35 pages long. But and it's clear to me that the author really doesn't like Donald Trump all that much, but they cannot deny the impact that he has had with regards to the election and likely will have in the coming years as president of the United States. But they do make some interesting points in there, how he tapped in to a mood in this country that the Democrats missed. And that mood, basically, if you were to put it in a corral, would be everyone, the blue-collar worker, the people that normally voted, who voted for Barack Obama over the last two cycles, just said the Democrats did not live up to their promises. In fact, in the article, it's really interesting what Donald Trump had to say during the election campaign. They point out was very similar to what Barack Obama had to say in 2007 and 2008, that he was going to bring the country back to greatness, et cetera, et cetera. But the article also points out that Barack Obama failed to do that. According to the blue-collar worker. Now, if you listen to the media, Barack Obama did a great job. But the blue-collar worker, the people who were losing their jobs, the people who were going to part-time rather than full-time, the people who—
Got the Obamacare bill.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. All of that, you know, the people the media didn't talk to, Donald Trump knew they were there. And he just tapped into that. Mm-hmm. And that elevated him to the victory, and so it's fascinating what he has done and continues to do. He is Like no other president in my history of covering politics, he's like no other leader anywhere in the world.
You know, it's interesting what you're talking about here. I was reading an opinion piece on Fox. It's written by a Democrat. I won't mention his name because I'd never heard of him. Probably most of our listeners haven't. But he was talking about the fact that his party was wrong in this election. He mentions the idea going forward with free trade was that all these jobs, yes, many thousands of Americans would lose jobs to Mexico and to China, but they would find jobs that paid just as much or more. And he says a study released last summer, by academics studying this process said that was wrong. They have not found these jobs that everyone thought they would find. They were not able to train and find new jobs in the communities in which they live. It's been a nightmare. In fact, this is a Democrat saying it's been a nightmare for these people. And those are the people who came out to vote for Donald Trump. And I would argue that not only did the Democrats miss this, I think the Republicans missed it. The ones who were running against Trump and the establishment especially, I think they also failed to understand what the undercurrent was.
And in this article, the Time Magazine cover article mentions that, is that the Republican establishment underestimated what was going on in the country as well. And they really felt they needed a Jeb Bush or someone more mainstream. But along comes Donald Trump, and he was just sensitive to the mood of the country. And but the other part of all of this that's coming out in the last few days, and you mentioned that Democrat, and I think this gentleman's from Oregon or Washington that wrote that article for Fox. He's been interviewed a few times on Fox. But there are other Democrats that say, Pelosi, really? Reelecting Pelosi as House Minority Leader? She's not bringing anything new to the table. Her thinking is part of the
reason. That woman, though, she's a rock of inspiration for millions of Americans. And I don't see how you just dismiss her like that out of hand. Pelosi will rise again.
For those watching on camera, on Facebook, they can see you.
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
And the ugly sweater. We are live video streaming on Facebook. Today's Issues Facebook page, you can engage us there.
Mm-hmm.
And we are audio and video streaming. Anyway.
That was a good one.
A rock of inspiration.
And then, on top of Pelosi, the lead candidate to chair the Democratic National Committee, the DNC, is Keith Ellison, the Muslim member, a Democrat from Minnesota. And there are people like Democrats. Well, we're talking Democrats here, like Alan Dershowitz, who's professor emeritus from Harvard University, and a Jewish
well-known lawyer, attorney.
Was
on the O.J. Simpson dream team.
Yeah.
This is a Democratic superstar of years past.
Exactly, and he is upset on the Keith Ellison front because Keith Ellison, who is, as I say, apparently the lead candidate to head the DNC, Keith Ellison has had connections with Louis Farrakhan in the past, who is openly anti-Semitic. And Dershowitz was saying
anti-Israel,
and Dershowitz was saying this morning in an interview again on Fox News, is that Keith Ellison, if you bring him in with given what he said about Israel, and that the United States needs to realign itself in the Middle East to favor the Muslim countries, and Dershowitz is saying you're going to bring him in as the face of the DNC,
right?
The Jewish supporters that we have had in the past, now they're going to abandon us if you do that.
Let me ask you this, Abe. Where does the Democrat Party go from here?
Well, it seems pretty clear with the reelection of Nancy Pelosi and the consideration of Keith Ellison that they're going further left, further to really officially declare themselves the Socialist Party of America. And the people that are, from my view, the rising stars, if you will, in the Democrat Party are, virulently extremist on the left. You have Elizabeth Warren, you have the Castro brothers out of Texas. One is the mayor of San Antonio. The other is a congressperson from the San Antonio area, and it just appears that they're going further and further and further to the left. You know, I watched this deal last night, unfortunately, on the Clinton News Network with Van Jones, and you know, he called the messy truth or something like that. The whole premise of the special was to try to get some common ground, some understanding between Clinton supporters and Trump supporters, but that was all a veneer. You know, Van Jones's, you know, extremist socialistic views continue to pierce through even an attempt to strike a conciliatory note. And so it's just become abundantly clear to me that the Democrat Party is going further and further to the left.
You know your party's in trouble when Joe Biden says, when I'm 80 years old, I'm in. he said that.
Yeah, when he's going to run?
No, he's going to. He said, I'm running. He said, I'm 4 years. You can count me in. I'm running for president.
And he's going to be 80?
Yeah.
Well, he actually said in 2020. That's what he said.
Yeah.
I'm going to run.
In 2020.
Yeah.
In 2020, he said, I'm running for president. He's already. So you can't count him in.
It's hard to figure to understand the kind of some people call it tone deafness, you know, blindness or whatever to what is going on in the country. And there's no doubt there is a kind of radicalized fringe in this country, you know, represented by I would say a lot of the Bernie Sanders supporters, Black Lives Matter, the Occupy Wall Street people, all those kind of. But that is a sliver of the population. And I tell you what people want to see. And this is why I think it was a brilliant strategy on the part of Trump to also reach out to Black Americans in this country in the inner cities, because people want real change. They don't want rhetoric. They want real change. And when you lose these blue collar Democrats, why do you think you lost them? Because their lives are falling apart.
Yeah.
People do not care about ideology when they can't get a job. And the first party to provide jobs for these folks, to renovate the inner cities, to bring better education to the inner cities, is going to capture a majority in this country for generations to come.
I think this is what's scary to the Democrats about Donald Trump, and that is that he would be successful.
Right.
I think all this stuff about, you know, he's this is not my president, and this is he's a hateful person, he's a bigot, he's all the names that they can throw at him. He's Hitler reincarnate and all this. I think what they're really most worried about, I believe that conservative principles, they're known by other names too, but conservative principles of government prosper people, all right, and advances your country economically. And if Donald Trump, now he's a bit of a hybrid,
right?
Okay, he's got some protectionist ideas, what conservatives would call protectionism. Others would call, no, that's just fairness.
Right.
You know, you leave our country, I'm going to slap a 35% tax on you.
Right.
Some people would say, well, that's protectionism. Others would say, no, that's fair play. You know, so yeah. I'm not going to argue that. But I'm just saying, I think basically the majority of the ideas that Donald Trump wants to implement, including deregulation, getting the backs of the government off the business community, small businesses in particular, has the potential to – and – as Abe has made reference to, school choice for inner cities, mm-hmm. you've said, Abe, could be a game changer,
yes.
right?
Yes.
And putting Ben Carson in charge of the housing and urban
HUD
development, or all these things, I think, could start to change things for the minority community in the inner cities. In particular, and could unleash economic growth in our country as we've not seen it in the last couple of decades. One other thing, and I'm not an economist, but Dan Celia is.
Right.
And Dan says, who's on our network from 8 to 10, Dan, I think I'm quoting Dan correctly, there are $2 or $3 trillion that are offshore, if you will,
mm-hmm.
that Americans have, but we dollars, maybe not just Americans, but people who, international people, I don't know. But anyway, the money is just waiting to come back to America to reinvest in our country, to build things and to get involved in businesses. But the regulations have and the taxation has been so suffocating and the volatility of the market that it's prevented this money from coming right back in to our shores. So I think that this money is ready to come back to America. Donald Trump has made reference to this. So there's a lot of potential in the next year, two, three, 4 years for a lot of good things to happen in our country. On the other hand, as Donald Trump has referenced, we're in a bubble economically too, so there's the potential for some really bad things to happen as a result of the last few years of, you know, we're now closing in on $20 trillion of debt. That's one negative. So there's just a lot of hope, but there's a lot of anxiousness out there.
I think too, and I mean, this is just one person's opinion, but I think Barack Obama came from, for the most part, strictly an academic background that celebrated an ideology.
Right.
And so what he celebrated when he was in office is the fight against global warming. Now, that doesn't resonate with a person who has lost their job.
Right.
What does that matter? You know, you're worried about the temperature going up a half a degree
in
over 100, the last
100
years. And so what does that have to do with me?
Yeah.
Donald Trump comes along and says, I'm going to get you a better job.
Right.
So who are you going to vote for? And so that's you know, Barack Obama, you know, he dealt in that world where every time there was violence, there was a terrorist attack. Barack Obama talked about gun control and changing gun laws. And again, that doesn't resonate with people. It really doesn't. How is that really going to deal with the violent problem in your hometown, Mr. Obama, of Chicago, where the number of murders this year has now just gone over 700 as of the end of November?
Right.
700 murders, not violent acts, murders.
Yeah.
So all of that was not resonating with the vast majority of voters over
there.
Thus,
Donald Trump appears on the cover of Time magazine as Person of the Year.
Yes.
Donald Trump is Person of the Year with Time magazine. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano and Abe Hamilton and News Director Fred Jackson. And you can check us out on the internet at afr.net, or on Facebook, Today's Issues Facebook page for American Family Radio. We appreciate you listening as always. Hey, today is
75th anniversary, Pearl Harbor. I'm not sure what the time zone difference here. But
5 hours from Central Time, USA.
Ceremonies, what is it, 7:30, 7:55, I think this morning, Hawaii time, there will be that moment of silence there. But
I've been there.
Really?
I've been there two times. Have you guys?
I've never been. Never been to Hawaii.
Been to the Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
We went, Walker, didn't we, when you went with me?
The USS Arizona is still underwater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's...
Yeah. Yeah, it's the memorial.
Sailors
it's a very famous
there.
Memorial there at Pearl Harbor. And Pearl Harbor, for those who don't know, is an actual harbor in Honolulu. And that's where the American fleet was stationed. The majority of the American fleet, right, I guess, were stationed on that fateful day, December 7th, 1941.
Yes.
Abe, do you remember that day?
I remember it from studying it in history.
I'll tell you this.
I wasn't alive at that day.
My dad, who was 12 years old, made a scrapbook, and I still have it, with clippings. And starting with the clipping from, you know, in the newspapers, which is where everyone got their news, and on radio, but newspapers is where they looked. And so he has that scrapbook with not only fallout from that, but Franklin Roosevelt, President Roosevelt's speech. And
we're going to play that.
Yes, next hour with Steve Jordahl when he comes in. He's got a little mini interview or something.
That
story
may be the most famous radio speech in history, that of Franklin Delano Roosevelt just after, I don't know if it was the day after or how long. I remember.
I think it was the next day. Asked Congress for a declaration of war against Japan, the Empire of Japan.
We're going to play that, at least part of that, from coming up at the top of the hour, because that's when Franklin Delano Roosevelt referenced the day that will live in infamy. And, you know, you just wonder, Abe, how, you know, things have changed so much, so much, because you would have had to wait to get your news. You know, there's no CNN or Fox News live on the scene at Pearl Harbor.
You don't go online to, you know.
So news is just getting back to the, you know, spreading from getting back to the U.S. In probably a 24-hour period on what had happened. Mm-hmm. And then you got to get the newspapers are trying to figure it out, and there's no video. There is video, but it's a video camera out. It's not a video that can be transmitted, for instance, over satellite over the internet. So that was a day that that changed the world. I don't know, the U.S. The U.S. didn't get involved in World War II up to that point.
Until then?
I don't even know if it was called World War II up to that point.
I don't think it was called World War II right off the bat, because World War I is supposed to be the war that ended all wars. But there was a very strong isolationist current in America. We do not want to send our boys over to Europe to die in another one of their wars. And so, of course, Winston Churchill was pleading with the United States to get involved, and that attack. You know, my dad wrote some very, very
Your dad was
strongly
a Marine.
Worded. Well, he was a Marine. He enlisted in 47. He wasn't old enough. But he wrote some very strong, insulting things about the Japanese the day after.
Well, that's the way a lot of Americans felt, though.
It changed the mood of the country instantaneously. And then Adolf Hitler, the following week after that, declared war on the United States. So there are a lot of historians that say if Hitler had not done that, we might have only gone to war with Japan and not gotten involved in war. So there's all you see the hand of God in a lot of these things. I think you can. Sometimes hard to read the mind of God, but who knows? We might not have gotten involved in Europe. Just
why did Japan attack us though? Did we provoke them?
Well,
the
historical thinking is that we had called for an embargo on, because of what Japan was doing in the Pacific, an embargo of Japanese goods and rubber and some other things. I can't remember everything, but there were economic tensions, and the fact of the matter is we had a very small navy. Japan, they thought, this is our chance to knock them out. We can knock out the United States.
Preemptive strike,
and then we can do whatever we want to do.
Okay.
Because we had allies. You know, we had, you know, Australia, New Zealand. The British had colonies still in the Pacific. And we might very well have gotten involved had they attacked, you know, Singapore or whatever. And so I think their thinking was, this is our chance to catch that fleet. They thought our aircraft carriers would
did.
Be there. Well, the aircraft carriers were not there.
But they surprised us, is what
yes,
I'm saying. Yeah.
That's right. They were hoping to knock us out so they could do whatever they wanted and we would never recover and challenge them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Part of Steve's piece that you're going to hear, he talked to David Barton, historian David Barton, about this, who compared Japan of that day to the ISIS of this day. Mm. They were not the Japan that we know today.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They were an aggressor.
Yes. They did terrible things in China.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and they were brutal, ruthlessly brutal to prisoners of war.
Yes. Right. Yes.
All right, we're going to. Fred, thank you.
You're welcome.
Go to our website, go to our Facebook page, and Walker's linked all the articles that we've talked about this morning. And Fred's stories can also be found at onenewsnow.com. Onenewsnow.com. We'll be back with Kirby Anderson momentarily.
On the next edition of Today's Issues, we're liable to hear some thoughts about social media.
Our Facebook page has really become more active.
Yeah, it's very interactive. A lot of supporters, a lot of listeners.
It's the spring of our Facebook page, not the winter.
Yeah, a lot of our listeners.
For years, we lay dormant. But now we've sprung up like a flower.
Where correspondents and commentators elucidate the electorate. It's Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on AFR.
Hey, our Holy Land tour in March is filling up. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We only go one time a year to Israel, and that's in March. And our tour leaves the 9th and gets back on the 17th. And as I say, we don't have a whole lot of space left on this tour. So if you'd like to go with us and see the Holy Land, you need to give us a call at 800-FAMILIES, option 5, and we'll send you a brochure. 800-FAMILIES, with an S, option 5, and leave us your name and your address. We'll send you a brochure, or go online at twholyland.com, twholyland.com. Again, we're going to Jerusalem and Bethlehem and Jericho and Nazareth and the Sea of Galilee and the Jordan River, all those places and much, much more. So join us on this very special tour of Israel in March.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and commentary next. A staggering new statistic from our nation's largest city. One-third of New Yorkers are immigrants. That's according to the mayor's Office for Immigrant Affairs. And a significant chunk of your tax dollars are going to fund programs to assist immigrants, legal or not. In 2014, the city spent close to $14 million a year. In 2015, New York City offered ID cards for immigrants, no matter their status. 900,000 signed up. Today, the city is spending $30 million on programs for immigrants. Now, the city says the free programs help improve the economy. But those free programs are not free. They're paid for by American taxpayers. Now, helping legal immigrants acclimate to America is one thing, but providing for illegals is another. And every dollar spent helping an illegal is one less dollar that's available to help Americans, including legal immigrants. I'm Todd Stearns.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Battagliano and Abe Hamilton. And momentarily, Kirby Anderson will be joining us from Dallas. Walker Wildman in with us. You went to Todd Stearns' Christmas special they recorded last night at Bellevue Baptist, didn't you?
Yes, that was my first time to be at Bellevue Baptist in a while. It's been years since I've been there. It's a huge, humongous church.
Right, in Memphis?
Yeah, and so Todd Stearns recorded his Todd Stearns Christmas special, which will air on American Family Radio, I believe on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day.
Okay.
And so my wife and I, Lexi, we got a sneak peek at what it'll be like. They recorded, had a lot of great artists.
How many people were there?
I would say there was a little over 1,000 people there.
Is Todd going to sing in this?
No, Todd didn't sing. He brought in the professionals for that.
Oh, good.
But Todd had some good humor there. And I'm trying
Todd
to think.
Todd was using humor?
Oh, yeah.
Guy's usually stoic. Have you ever noticed that?
And you know, I'll tell you this.
Never cracks a smile.
You never know when to take Todd seriously. And one of the main sponsors of the show was some pork company who makes pork.
P-O-R-K?
Yeah, and I thought it was a joke to start out the show. So-and-so will be sponsoring this show, some pork company. I started laughing. Nobody else was laughing. And I realized they seriously sponsor the show.
Yeah. Hey, people eat bacon, ham, and...
Hey, and it's in Memphis. I mean, you're talking about
Bologna,
barbecue.
Yeah, and barbecue. Pig's a sacred animal in Mid-South, Walker.
Yeah. So one of the
just
artists...
Just for bacon alone.
...was right. Jason Crabb. He's one of the artists that performed last
right.
night. They had some Southern Gospel families that sung. Overall, it was great, and I would encourage people to tune into AFR to listen to it.
Todd, he's from Mississippi,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So he's up there
in
New York.
He lives in New York, works for Fox News, and Todd's a wonderful guy, just loves the Lord, loves America, and Fox News just lets him do what he wants to, you know, as far as covering stories, basically that involve Christians and Christianity and religious freedom.
patriotism, those kinds of things. They just turn him loose because Todd brings in the viewers and the traffic to the website of Fox News.
Right.
So he's a
golden goose.
Yeah. So they don't mess with him much. They just say, what's going on out there in the country on the culturally conservative side. We want you to cover that. And he's an unapologetic advocate for traditional values and biblical.
He's kind of like a Paul Harvey kind of thing because he's got a little a funny twist on the things.
Andy Rooney type.
Even closer to Andy Rooney.
And the last thing I'll say about the Christmas show is Christianity and Christ, Jesus Christ, were well represented on the show. Throughout the whole show.
That's another thing you can credit to the credit of the Fox News Channel.
Mm-hmm.
They don't censor out Christmas.
Right.
Or Easter or Christianity I think that's what's to their credit again. So we'll air his show on the on a radio.
Yes.
And then it'll also air on the Fox News Channel, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then you got our Facebook. Are you keeping up with our Facebook page?
Yep. I got the Pearl Harbor stories posted on the Today's Issues Facebook page, and all upcoming stories will be there also.
Okay. Today's Issues Facebook page. Walker Wildman keeps our page active and updated, and so that the stories you hear us talk about here, we post there, so you don't have to go searching all over the internet for them. Well, we want to welcome to our show Kirby Anderson. Kirby is host of his own radio program daily, heard across the country on many stations, including American Family Radio, and we re-air the broadcast of Point of View in the evenings. Kirby is also president of Probe Ministries. They are a Christian think tank, I would call them, in Dallas, and they do a lot of worldview analysis of current issues. Kirby, good morning to you.
Yeah, Tim, Ed, Abe, and Walker, thank you so much for letting me be a part of this.
There's four of us, Nick. You make five.
I know, conflict. Very conflicting.
Hey, where can people read your writings and listen to you and stuff like that?
Well, again, Point of View is, a daily program, airs 1 to 3 Central Time, 2 to 4 Eastern. And I do a Point of View commentary, which not only airs, as you've pointed out, on American Family Radio, but many other radio stations, including ones that don't even carry Point of View. So you can go to pointofview.net and find all sorts of good material there. And, of course, as you mentioned, I'm with Probe, so go to probe.org, and you'll find lots of articles there that we have posted on all these different issues. So it's been a busy kind of last couple of weeks, and if nothing else, we need to clear out all of our Kellogg's products out of our cupboards, don't we?
Yeah, Kellogg's companies decided they told the Breitbart News Agency, which is a conservative news organization, Breitbart. Many of our listeners are familiar with that.
They popular website.
Exactly. They told them that they were not advertising any longer because they didn't share the values of Kellogg's. In essence, what this is, it's a very liberal decision by Kellogg's to diss conservatives. Therefore, they've lost a lot of customers, Kellogg's has, over this. You can read about it on the internet.
Do you think leftists eat a lot of Pop-Tarts and Apple Jacks? I'm just thinking
gluten-free variety.
Yeah, what's the thinking here? What's the economic, the commercial thinking here? Are you going to alienate conservatives as this word gets out and filters out, and more and more conservatives hear this?
You know, when we've talked to corporations, and we've done a lot over the years, we always advocate that they stay neutral,
right?
On the cultural issues, and don't take sides if you can help it. You know what I'm saying? And so a lot of companies have adhered to that because, you know, if you're in business, you're not wanting to upset potential customers, whether they're liberal, conservative, Republican, Democrat. You just try to provide the best product, and you don't get involved in taking sides on culturally divisive issues. That would be the advice I would give to most companies, and Kirby, but Kellogg's has decided they're going to take the liberal side. And
well, again, you watch it. What happened to Target? How does this come about? most of these come from CEOs, like in Grubhub, for example. The CEO there, Matt Maloney, he's the one that said, if you don't agree with my statements about Donald Trump, you can just hand in your resignation right now. And you got Bill Pennsy of Pennsy Spices, again, another CEO, goes on to this whole rant about Donald Trump and says that if you voted for him, you've brought about the biggest act of racism in American history since George Wallace stood at the schoolhouse doorway 53 years ago. And I'm thinking, these are bright people when it comes to business, but they're, can I use the word, idiots when it comes to alienating the customers who actually may have voted for Donald Trump, may hold to these values, may go to Breitbart, or feel that you should have a bathroom for boys and girls and not allow transgender people to go to it. And yet these CEOs are making all sorts of stupid decisions that affect their bottom line. And you would think, if nothing else, watching what the boycott to Target has done, and now this dump Kellogg's petition is doing, some of them would say, you know, I've got some really strong opinions about Donald Trump or about Christians or about conservatives, but I think I better keep them to myself.
Target hadn't recovered.
Mm-mm. No.
They've not recovered yet. They may have thought this was going to be a blip on their financial screen.
Right.
But now I'm not saying that they're out of business or that they're closing stores, but in April, Target announced that they thought it was a great idea if they allowed men into women's restrooms and changing areas. They thought that was a good thing to announce to the world, and all of corporate America would follow. Well, all of corporate America didn't follow, because nearly 1.5 million now individuals/families, Abe, have said, you know what, Target? You're going to let men into women's restrooms and boys into girls' changing areas. We're not shopping with you. Mm-hmm. We'll go somewhere else. It's easy to do.
Yeah, and I think when you were talking it, the thought came to my mind when you asked what kind of thinking goes into it. The fact is, it's not much thinking at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's not thinking. It's not reasoning. And Dan Celia goes on and on
about
this. You
mean financially, you mean economically.
Yeah, financially, economically. He says that these people are putting their personal activist desires above their profit motives, mm-hmm. you know, for the shareholders.
That's unusual for pagans. You know, they usually want to make money over everything. Let me ask you this, though, Abe. You went on behalf of American Family Association to California back in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Target had their annual shareholders meeting in California, as I mentioned. You went out there and you asked a question of the CEO of the company, Target, about what went into this decision, did you not?
I did. I asked him and their entire board of directors whether or not they conducted any type of cost-benefit analysis before announcing this misguided and dangerous bathroom policy. That's the exact question.
And what did they say?
And the bottom line was, they had not done anything. They had not done any cost-benefit analysis. They had not done any, you know, focus group research. They had not done any baseline querying. And really, I didn't think about this before, but it really was kind of a predictor of what ultimately happened in our presidential election, because you have, you know, Hillary Clinton going on the tried and true, you know, leftist agendas without actually taking into consideration what real American people mm-hmm. on the ground actually think about the issues. And so, and here we are months later with Target billions of dollars in the hole, as made evident by their jettisoning of top officials at executive positions.
And Donald Trump. Times person of the year.
Well, I mean, and I'll say this: any other decision like that where the company didn't weigh out the factors will probably get someone at the top executive management fired. But I think because this is such a divisive issue, Target didn't want to be the company to fire their CEO over this decision.
Yeah, so they're trying to weather it. But you're right. Had this been a decision that the CEO of Target had made about almost any other issue in their company, mm-hmm. and they had suffered the economic loss that they've suffered because of this. I mean, they're offering 15% discounts in store and online.
Never done it in the history of their store.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're wanting to get the foot traffic, is what they call it in the industry, back into the Target stores that left them after their decision. Kirby, one question relative to this too is, why do you think a company like Target, for example, and they have a long liberal history, by the way, Target does, would feel the necessity to make an announcement like this to the world when nobody was asking them to?
And a lot of that comes from wanting to be sort of on the cutting edge on some of these moral issues. And you can see it because you and I have spent time dealing with the media. You go into these newsrooms, and it's so self-reinforcing that they are not even aware of other people. It's like in 1968 when this was heard in the New York Times room, a newsroom where somebody said, I don't know how Richard Nixon was elected. I don't know anybody that voted for him. And I'm sure in the newsrooms right now you're having people saying, I don't know how Donald Trump was elected. I don't know anybody that voted for him. And the same thing in some of these areas of academia and in some of these boardrooms where you have individuals that grow up in a liberal environment. They go to a liberal school. They are reinforced with all of these liberal ideas. Then they sort of buy into secular progressivism. They go into boardroom, and very rarely sometimes are there very prominent Christians in some of those areas. So when they make this announcement, they are expecting everybody in the country to stand up and applaud them for being so progressive and so forward-thinking. And it comes from the fact that they don't necessarily even understand what's going on in the so-called flyover country, which is something we talked about a few minutes ago with Todd Starnes. They see a Todd Starnes, they see Duck Dynasty, they even right now see our friends of the gangs in Waco as sort of oddities, and don't realize that these are people that really tap into the very heartbeat of the American people.
Yeah, the New York Hollywood flyover, the New York Hollywood, you know, Washington sort of
axis.
Yeah, axis.
Yeah. Bi-coastal ideology.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And you know, they have their own way of viewing the world. It's very, very liberal. And if you don't subscribe to it, they blackball you, or they throw you out, or they, you know, lambast you. Let me ask you this. I don't know if we've talked to you since the election, Kirby. I wanted you to there's one part of Donald Trump. Well, Donald Trump in some ways is simplistic. In other ways, he's hard to understand, or he's complex, I guess you would say. Let me ask you this, your thoughts on Donald Trump's political ideology. Who would have ever thought that it would be a businessman or a real estate tycoon from New York City who basically grew up agnostic, if you will? I mean, he references his Christian childhood. He reveres his mother, who he says took him to Sunday school, and he grew up in a Presbyterian church, but most all of his adult life, he didn't go to church, he says. So he hasn't, quote, hung around with Christians very much. He got to be friends with evangelicals in some way. I don't know. He got friends with Jerry Falwell Jr., for example. And you would think the person I've described would basically be a liberal. That's everybody else in New York pretty much is. And here you have this fella who's Mr. Manhattan, was a celebrity apprentice, had his TV show for 10 years. It was the number
Playboy.
One. Playboy for much of his life, did what he wanted to. And yet here we are. He's 70 years old, and he wants to run for president to make America great again. And a lot of the people he's appointing now are very conservative. On a lot of issues, he himself identifies as conservative. Did he have an epiphany of some kind politically, or what do you think happened to Donald Trump? I guess it would have happened between the age of 60 and 70.
Well, I think, first of all, there probably is a little bit of epiphany that came from just common sense. It's what we call common grace. He may not look to the Bible for biblical principles, but over time, he's figured out what works in the business world. And even as his daughter has pointed out, he was the guy that wasn't always sitting up there in his Manhattan suite making decisions. He was down there with the workers and interacting with a lot of individuals. So some of that came from just common grace. But the reason for these appointments, I think, in large part, come to the fact that he is new to the system. Because even when George W. Bush came in, they had kind of the Bush group that came in, and certainly Hillary Clinton already had in her mind all the people she was going to put into office. But Donald Trump's like, I'm not sure who to get. So when he brings in Mike Pence, And then when he says that he's going to have the Heritage Foundation and the Federalist Society, two very conservative groups, make up a list of those 21 individuals that he wants to put in the federal court and the Supreme Court, you have people like Kelly Shackelford saying, we've never had that kind of access to actually begin to vet some of these various individuals in the judiciary. And then when you start putting people in the bureaucracy, you have people like Tony Perkins saying, again, we've never had this kind of access, even when you go all the way back to Ronald Reagan or even to George W. Bush. He's spending a fair amount of time getting advice, and so as a result, putting people in positions of leadership. And so when you say, well, is he going to be serious about replacing Obamacare, repeal and replace? Well, yes, he puts in Dr. Tom Price, who mm-hmm. is actually the individual that has wrote the bill to actually repeal and replace Obamacare. When you say, is he really serious about education? Well, he brings in Betsy DeVos. Is he really going to change the direction of the Attorney General's office? Yes, he brings in Jeff Sessions. And these are all people, Tim, you and I have interviewed over the years. These are people we know. These are people that we've had on our program, and we couldn't have picked better people to serve in the bureaucracy than if he came to your door there in Tupelo and asked you who you'd put on those various positions. So it's been phenomenal in terms of what has happened so far.
Ed, I don't think, by the way, we're talking to Kirby Anderson. Kirby is in Dallas. You're listening to American Family Radio. You can get us on the internet at AFR.net, AFR.net. Ed, I don't think what Kirby's talking about right there, I don't think, I mentioned this yesterday or the day before, with the possible exception of Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, had he been elected, I don't think you would have gotten as conservative a cabinet as we're seeing assembled by any of the presidential candidates. I just don't think you would have seen it. So, maybe it's a little bit surprising to some people.
Well, I think you're exactly right. Ted Cruz is probably the only exception. The others, I think, were more establishment oriented.
Yeah.
You know, they were conservative. But I remember under George W. Bush, I think Karl Rove, who was an establishment person, Republican establishment, I think he basically helped to keep social conservatives at arm's length away from George Bush. So when you talk about access to an administration, I think that you had that going on. And Donald Trump, for whatever the reason, like you said, this is a complex history. It'd be interesting when the history books are written to find out, you know, what trail he's taken to get here. But he is, in a sense, against the establishment without being against the establishment. I mean, you're just not going to have Karl Roves in his administration who are going to look at social conservatives as pariahs or as, you know, the ugly stepchild, to use a metaphor. So I think this is a rare moment in U.S. history when you have a figure like Donald Trump, who may not even be a Christian,
we don't know about his personal commitment to Christ or not. He would say, yes, I'm a Christian, but he's basing that on the fact that he grew up in the Presbyterian Church. We all know people like that. Mm-hmm. And we know that they need to have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ to be born again, mm-hmm. and maybe they're on the road to that, you know, mm-hmm. or some people, God's placed people in his path that will ultimately lead him to that if he hasn't accepted Christ already.
But what I was going to say is that he may not even be a Christian, but he appears to have been chosen by God, perhaps, we don't know what's coming, to maybe be the pivot for a historical change in America, which is completely unexpected, for at least in my mind, didn't expect it.
That leads me to a question. How if that happens, what do you think the historical change pivot, what do you think it would look like if there is a pivot like that? Because I'm just so used to being inundated with overt, aggressive, nonstop
barrage. We've been beat down for eight years.
with almost no hope for anything else in sight.
The new normal was, maybe it didn't rain in on top of my head today. Maybe it's just thunder, cloudy.
That's not an overstatement at all.
I know. We had been sort of demoralized in many ways, and the election of Donald Trump as again, he's not the savior of mankind,
right?
Sure,
but he's given us a new
hope mm-hmm. that wasn't there. Kirby, it,
yeah. What do you think the pivot could be if there are some fundamental changes?
Right, we need to call him Dr. Kirby, okay? Because he's doing psychological profiling here or analysis. Go ahead, Kirby.
Well, I think the pivot could come real quickly. You know, just even heard today that Mike Pence said, "Hold on, for the first 100 days of Donald Trump are going to be amazing because look at so many things that have come down." As Abe was pointing out just a minute ago, those controversial issues, the ones that affected us negatively, a lot of those had to do with decisions that weren't made by Congress. They were executive orders right. or decisions made by the bureaucracy. Donald Trump could write down and simply on an executive order say, no more will the Department of Health and Human Services persecute any individual that does not want to provide abortifacients right. for their people. That alone says stop. He could simply write an executive order that says no longer will the Justice Department and the Department of Education be allowed to reinterpret Title IX, when it says sex, that really means gender identity, and yeah. thus forcing everybody to have transgender bathrooms. So very quickly, that pivot could come simply by different executive orders, even before Congress begins to act. And I don't know about you guys, but I guess I'm the oldest one around the table here. I cannot remember a time where a president-elect has been so active before he's taken the oath of office. Not even Ronald Reagan in 1980, and certainly not George W. Bush, and not even for the Democratic candidates, for example, like Bill Clinton or Barack Obama, have been so active long before he's even held up his hand. It tells me that those first 100 days could be really significant, and that pivot could happen very, very early in his administration.
He's making deals with companies like Carrier.
I've never seen anything like this before.
Kirby, I got a question. This is Walker here. Speaking of that, of making deals with companies, how do you view that? Do you view that as kind of muddy waters? Does he need to be careful with that, or can he just go out and deal make with companies to keep them in the U.S.?
Yeah, and that's a concern. I've got to Michelle Malkin on today in the first hour, and one of the things we'll talk about is she wrote that book, You Didn't Build It, and she's done a lot of research on the Carrier company, so we'll be talking about that a little bit. And I think we have to say, you know, as much as we like the saving of 1,100 jobs, he's going to have to be careful, and the people around him are going to have to be careful to say, look, you know, you don't want to start another set of precedents, because we know so well what happens when you start having this mindset, too big to fail, and we have to bail out the banks, and what a disaster that was under the Obama administration. So I think there's some reasonable concerns that conservatives can have, but at the same time, you've got to enjoy, can we use the word chutzpah, the gall that he took a phone call from the leader of Taiwan and upset the Chinese in a way to say, you know, this is a different sheriff in town, and he was willing to go and first of all work with Carrier and now threaten some others. You know, right now you've even had Ford saying, we were thinking about moving a plant to Mexico, but we're going to wait and decide about this because we want to see what's going to happen. And of course, if he lowers the corporate income tax, all those dollars that Tim was talking about, $2 trillion in round numbers that could come back into this country, you can see that he's going to be working the system and leaning on some of the companies. And I think, again, we might like the conclusion, but again, he's got to be careful not to set precedents where then all of a sudden other companies will say, you know, I think I'm going to move to Mexico because we want a tax break. That would be a dangerous precedent. Right. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you got to love at least how he's having this tour, just traveling around the country right now, kind of a thank you tour. And this is something we've never seen as well. A speech last night in North Carolina, you would think he was running for office, and he's the next president of the United States. So we've got to enjoy the ride while it takes place.
Yeah, and he won. He is selected, I should say, Time Magazine's Person of the Year. And, you know, they would have rather slit their wrist.
They wanted to make Fidel Castro their Person of the Year. I guarantee that.
It was probably close. Yep. Between Castro and Trump at Time Magazine. All right, Kirby, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it very much, and look forward
Thank
to
you.
Point of View.
Okay.
All right, we're going to take a break for news, and then we got more good stuff to talk about in 5 minutes.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.